Good morning.
Good morning.
So that's true, isn't it? That's true. Good morning. And good comes first. Good is primary. Good is first. The earth has turned, and we see the sun again. And we experience temperature and sensations in the body, and sound, taste, and color. Birth and death is here. We call it morning, soon we'll call it afternoon. Later we'll call it evening. Good. It's good first. So, I hope that's your experience. So I'm going to give a short talk today. I'll offer some words to you. Despite the fact that in your heart you already know. But we've got this neat tradition, this lovely ritual we do in Zen Buddhism called the Dharma Talk, where someone sits here instead of there, and they let words come out of their mouth. And all of our job collectively is to find Dharma, to experience Dharma, to experience something deep and true and helpful and supportive. So, if you look for it, you'll find it. It's in your heart. But I'll talk anyway. So if I start distracting you, just ignore me. All right. So on the program today, there are two quotes. And they're about giving up. They're about giving. They're about letting go. They're about offering. The first quote is from David Steindl-Rast, brother David Steindl-Rast. I think he's in the Benedictine tradition. I might be wrong about that. He says, in many traditions, you have this notion that throughout our lives, we train for a right dying. And that means to train for flowing with life, for giving ourselves. And this suggests some more symptomatic idioms of taking and giving that show ways we can make the inner gesture of dying, giving thanks instead of taking for granted, giving up rather than taking possession, forgiving as opposed to taking offense. What we take for granted does not make us happy. What we hold on to deteriorates in our grasp. What we take offense at, we make into a hurdle we can't get past. But in giving thanks, giving up, forgiving, we die here and now and become more fully alive. And the second little quote that I have there is actually part of a longer interview that the Parabola magazine was doing with Houston Smith. Tim's talked about Houston Smith from this seat before. We lost him recently. He died recently, but a lot of you know the name Houston Smith. And Parabola magazine, do you guys know Parabola magazine? Good. If you don't, go home and Google Parabola magazine. It's brilliant. They asked him, what would the ordinary, virtuous, non-religious American miss out on by not aligning him or herself to a religious tradition? And Houston Smith answered, Sat Chit Ananda. That's Sanskrit. Infinite being, infinite awareness, infinite bliss. Does the ordinary, decent, secular American aspire to that? Does he see it as even within his register? There is a special circle in Dante's hell that is populated by souls whose only fault was that their aspirations were too low. So I'm going to talk just for a few minutes about these two things. You probably can already see the thread. I can kind of see where I'm going to go with these things. Offering. Huge theme in all of Buddhism, and it shows up a lot in Mahayana Buddhism. We've actually had a couple of talks recently here about offering. And the second quote refers to aspiration, and we talk a lot about vow. We talk a lot about vow in Zen Buddhism. We talk a lot about aspiration. And before I start, I want to make sure that we understand the way we're using the term aspiration. It is not a goal. Your goal for the year, or your goal for your business, or your goal for your... That's something different than aspiration or vow. Aspiration or vow is something much, much, much larger than that. So the way I'm using the word today, aspiration or vow. So the first quote by Brother David is about giving, offering. He talks about giving thanks, giving up, forgiving. In the Buddhist tradition, we call this dana, offering. We call it, we translate dana as generosity. In a little while here, we'll pass around the dana bowl, the generosity bowl, the offering bowl. It's a place for giving. He mentions not taking possession. Giving up rather than taking possession. Boy, that really sounds like traditional Buddhism, doesn't it? For those of you who know the tradition, to not take possession of something is seen as offering. That theme actually goes all the way back. Dogen talks a lot about to relinquish desire, to give up grasping, is in itself offering. For me to not want something you have is automatically an offering to you. It's seen as generosity. Isn't that cool? It's seen as relinquishment of grasping is automatically giving, is automatically generosity. So we are asked to give up a lot in the Buddhist tradition, and the easiest way of touching that idea today is what we do on the cushion, in between those two bells. We give up. We offer. We let go of. Thoughts, ideas, distractions, daydreams. I like the word agenda, because normally when I wander from the cushion, when my awareness wanders from body and breath, it's because I have an agenda for the moment, and I want it to be different in some way. My boredom, my frustration, my daydream about how I wish this were different or better, or, you know, I find this boring, so I wander to some place that isn't boring. That's about my agenda. So to relinquish the daydream or the planning or the rehearsing or the reviewing or the agenda is the primary relinquishment. It's the primary relinquishment in Zen. And you can sort of see how that's really relinquishment of self. Really, we don't always think of it that way. But in the experience of Zazen, when self shows up, with it shows up, it, he, she, they shows up, and starts to do the filter thing, the I like, the I don't like, the I have a story, that we relinquish that, and we go back to something that is before self. Right? Before morning shows up, there's good. So when morning shows up, we let go of morning. That's a label and an idea, and we go back to something primary. There's something healing about that for us, which is maybe counterintuitive. Maybe we would expect to experience that as very painful, even bereft, make us feel bereft. It can feel that way. I guess I've experienced it feeling that way, but usually when the agenda leaves, I experience some deep connection, some intimacy, some peace, some contentment. So, one of the ways that I've been working with this lately is when I experience affliction, when I experience suffering, one of the ways that I've given it up or offered it or relinquished it is by renaming it in my head. And this is just me playing with words. I'm a word guy and I like playing with words. But I notice when I play with words, it can sometimes change the way I experience things. That our words, that the words that we choose to describe our experience actually says quite a lot about how we relate to it. Oh, my loneliness. I'm lonely. I have loneliness. I have loneliness. It's my loneliness. You can see the ownership, can't you? You can see the possession. You can feel the grasping, actually. It's mine. Isn't that funny? I mean, if Jim wanted to borrow my loneliness, I might not want to let him. It's funny. It's really funny. And then it's actually not, because I'm like, yeah, I chose to continue to tell myself the story that made me lonely. And I chose it. And usually it was unconscious choice, right? And then at some point I become conscious of the fact, oh, I'm telling myself the story again that makes me lonely. Wow. And I do it again. Like, wow, there's a need being met there. I'm choosing this. Are you aware of that about yourself? You know how we choose our suffering? We like it. We really do. We take it out, polish it, juice it up, charge its batteries. We say we don't wanna, but ooh, we do it. We do it. Wow, and it's mine, 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 mine. So one of the things I've done recently is, and I think I must have stolen this because that's way too clever for me. I think I got this from probably Pema Chodron. But I have it in my head that in the Tibetan tradition they talk about this is the loneliness. It's not yours. Oh, you're feeling the loneliness, aren't you? You're feeling the sadness. You're feeling the heartbreak. You're feeling the anger. The changes my relationship with that experience. So when loneliness arises in me, or whatever the experience is, to refer to it as the helps just a little bit, helps me just a little bit disconnect from this death grip, this sense of possession and ownership. And sometimes that can help, and it'll change my experience. And there's a story in traditional Buddhism about that. The Kisa Gotami, I think, is she the one who's mad with grief, and the Buddha says, oh, I can fix this for you, just go get a mustard seed from a house that's never experienced grief. And she goes from house to house to house to house and realizes every house ever has been touched by grief, and that her grief is the grief. And so it changes her relationship with it. Does it still hurt? Of course. But she realizes she's having a huge human experience and doesn't have quite the investment in the narrative. So that's been helpful for me recently. And the second quote is about aspiration for me, aspiration and letting go. Houston Smith said, there is a special circle in Dante's hell that is populated by souls whose only fault was that their aspirations were too low. Well, that led me to wonder, when are my aspirations too low? How do I know if my aspirations are too low? And again, we're using the word aspiration here, though, same way we use vow. So this is different than a goal. This is different than a goal. And sometimes aspirations sound very abstract and intangible, but that does not keep them from being aspirations. So at the end of the talk today, we will chant the four bodhisattva vows, the four bodhisattva aspirations, and you'll get a sense of how those feel when they come out of your mouth. You can feel the size of the aspiration in them. So I started looking around in my noodle here for a kind of litmus test. How do I know when my aspirations are too low? And there's probably a bunch of ways. You can investigate this in your own heart and find your own answers. But I came up with four things, and I decided that if you're the only one included in your aspirations, they're too low. If you think your aspirations are coming from you, they're too low. If your aspirations leave anyone out or anything out, they're too low. And finally, if words can adequately convey your aspirations, they're too low. That's what I decided. I made it up. They felt true to me. So in Zen, the primary way we express intention is zazen. Zazen is physical embodiment of our aspiration for freedom for all beings, universal enlightenment. And Zazen shows up as an atom bomb to anything limited, anything small, anything partial, anything divided, any part of us that picks and chooses, anything that has edges, boundaries, or border. Zazen blows all that up. Zazen is a field far beyond form and emptiness, which is what we say about our robe. It is far beyond form and emptiness, far beyond good and bad, far beyond self and other. It's especially beyond self. Zazen is especially beyond self. So in Zazen, we surrender our self. So when you are doing Zazen, if any part shows up of your any part of your experience shows up and you can say, this is me, this is mine, let it go. Please let it go. Let it go or be dragged. It'll drag you. Well, you know that, or else you wouldn't be here. Right? When you feel dragged around by your life, you have a choice. That's what Zazen's for. And you know, the whole let go idea, it scares us because we associate clinging and grasping with security. Even though in our experience it's the opposite, we still have that. It's hard wiring. It's very hard for us. So when someone says let go, we actually get anxious. Most of us, most of the time. So encourage yourself. Be very gentle and encourage yourself to relax. Right? You're not drowning. You don't have to hang on quite so tight to the idea, to the belief, to the goal, to the view, to the agenda, to the self. We all want freedom. Every one of us wants freedom. And freedom and hanging on tight are opposites. They are opposites. So, the opposite of faith is control. And I'm inviting us to relinquish that grip, that control, so that we can experience something larger. We let go of this small self that's always scared, that's always wanting to control, that never trusts. Right? That's why we do so much Zazen. That's our letting go practice. That's our aspiration practice, our surrender practice. And it reminds me a bit of floating in a pool, on the lake, on the ocean. When you learn to swim and you get confident enough that you can just let yourself float, that's a very different experience than doing a stroke. We need both of them. But when you're floating, Zazen can be kind of seen as floating practice, faith practice maybe. You're just lying there and you have that sense of being supported by the entire earth. The entire earth is underneath you, floating. You're floating and it's holding you. You need to do so little to stay on top. You have to do so little. So little effort's required. So little effort. Wow. And in those moments, when I let myself float, I'm just aware of how much time I spend. You know, that's necessary sometimes too, right? But how much of my life is going to be swimming against a current, and how much will be just trusting? When we directly experience this, being supported by the great entirety. We can experience this in many ways in our life, on the cushion, off the cushion, in the pool, in the car. This experience of being supported by all things, it teaches us to relinquish. And the truth is, one of the reasons we make ourselves do Zazen so much is because if we don't have a direct experience, if we don't make ourselves stop swimming from time to time, we forget that we can float. We forget to trust. We forget, and our aspirations become very small. Right? And if you don't stop swimming from time to time, and if you don't experience floating from time to time, you won't know the universe in a friendly way. It can always be an obstacle against which you will struggle. You might even believe that your struggle is what's keeping you afloat. And that's honestly what most of us believe most of the time. It's my struggle with life that keeps me alive. It's my struggle that keeps my head above the water. Because we don't stop long enough to experience how it supports us. So, you are supported. You are supported by all beings in all times and all places and all ways. You are supported by the great ocean. And to live your life and not know that, to not experience that would be a tragedy. I know people who have done that. I know the majority of people know that. To live your whole life believing that you are fighting against a cruel world would be a tragedy. To live your whole life believing you are entitled to your health, your body, your breath, your family, your friends. To live believing you're entitled to your life would be a tragedy. Why? Because then you'd take it for granted. You would take it for granted. We take for granted. What we take for granted does not make us happy. You would miss the greater truth that the whole of creation bears you witness. The whole of creation holds you up. The whole of creation verifies you and realizes itself through you. Your practice in this room on these Zafus is the practice of the whole of creation. There is no other practice than this. So you can't make it just yours. It's too selfish. It's too small. It's everything doing itself through you. It is infinite. And that's what we do here at Zen Center. Pretty cool. That's what we do here at Zen Center. Please join us. Thank you very much.